Are you one of those people who can name more buddies who died after coming home than what you lost downrange? You go to one funeral, then another, and someone eventually cracks a dark joke like, well, I guess I'll see you at the next one. And then it hits you that this isn't slowing down on its own. You miss the guys who chewed the same dirt that you did. But between the flights, the money to get there, work, family, all of it takes its toll and makes a real reunion seem impossible. Now, imagine if you were able to get the whole company back together for a long weekend. No generic briefings or PowerPoints, just your guys in the same room, walking through the deployment from pre-mobilization all the way to the day that you got on the bird coming back home. And finally hearing what really happened in the moments that still wake you up at night. Think about your old platoon, your own old company, getting together, maybe for the first time in years. Adam Swift, our guest today, and Independence Funds are coming into this episode to help you understand how your unit can spend hours on a long weekend with clinicians who actually speak your language, and then go laugh your ass off later at a hockey game or changing tires at a NASCAR garage, instead of just sitting there drinking the pain away by yourself. This is what the program Operation Resilience does for units that feel like being home turned out more dangerous than being downrange. If you ever thought to yourself, when is someone going to do something about this? All these guys that we're losing. This episode is going to tell you how one leader finally answered that question and how you can too, regardless of what position you held while you were deployed. It could be the lowest ranking private all the way up to the highest ranking officer in that unit. Anybody can take charge and step in and get your unit the help that you need, even years after being together for the last time. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that's important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, the families, and civilians who were impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial will serve as both a tribute to those who served and as a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you would like to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Adam, Stephen, welcome to the show. Really looking forward to this conversation. I think this is going to be a great episode, great conversation. But first off, to both of you, welcome and thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Before we get into kind of the meat of the episode, for the listeners who aren't familiar with who you two are, could you just give us a quick rundown of a little bit of who you are, maybe military background, kind of what you're doing today and that type of thing. Maybe Adam, we could start with you and then Stephen, but just a, you know, kind of quick rundown just for folks so they kind of know who we're chatting with here.
For sure. Again, thanks for having me. My name's Adam Swift. I guess in relation to this, I was a platoon leader in 117 Infantry. And we deployed to Afghanistan in 2009, 2010. I ended up doing about 10 years active duty and then finished off the rest of my career in the reserves and retired in December of 2023. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and got connected with the Independence Fund in 2024 and found out about their awesome program, Operation Resilience. I was able to bring our unit out to experience that retreat through them. I'm so excited to be here and talk about how great it was and what our experience was like.
Yeah, that's going to be a big piece of what we're chatting about today. You know, not only just the Independence Fund, but how that Operation Resilience worked for you guys. So glad you're able to kind of bring that up a bit. And Stephen, how about you? Just a quick intro.
My name's Stephen Rosina. I'm the Deputy Chief of Operations for the Independence Fund. Funny enough, I am one of the few people at the Independence Fund that's not a veteran. My background is actually law enforcement. I've been in law enforcement for about 15 years and came over to the Independence Fund because one of our other programs is the Veterans Justice Initiative. So my job when I first got here was to teach law enforcement and other first responders how to help veterans in crisis. And since then I've moved up, but like Adam said, we got to meet him at one of our OPRES events last year. And I'll tell you, his unit kind of set the gold standard on how awesome units can be at OPRES. They're by far probably one of our favorite ones. They were really great the entire weekend, especially Adam.
And so I want to get into a little bit more about Operation Resilience and how that whole program works, because I'm sure there's some folks out there who are just hearing about it now mm-hmm. for the first time, and they're really not sure, you know, what that's all about, and you know, could that help them or their unit or people that they know or things like that. So Stephen, maybe from your perspective, like, tell us a little bit about the program, kind of where it came from, how that kind of got integrated into what the Independence Fund is doing. And I want to get more into the Independence Fund
right.
just in general as well, but for now, let's just maybe focus on Operation Resilience, and then we can kind of get into that a little bit later. But yeah, just kind of maybe an overview of the program.
Yeah. So Operation Resilience is the brainchild of our CEO, Sarah Verardo. If you don't know who Sarah is, she's an advocate, national advocate for veterans issues. Her husband was a veteran of the Army, Bravo Company 2508. Her husband, Michael, he actually tragically passed away this past summer due to his wounds after about 120 surgeries. But that unit was, they got blown up a lot in Afghanistan back in about 2010, 2011. And throughout the 2010s, they started seeing a pattern of suicides. And in 2018, they were at the funeral for one of those members. It was a suicide funeral. And one of the guys actually made the comment, "I guess I'll see you guys at the next one." And that was like that trigger point right there. Sarah's like, "No, we're done with this. We got to think of something." So she started working her connections with the administration, the up in DC, working connections with the VA, clinicians, our chief clinician, Keita Franklin. And I think they actually started like writing on a bar napkin of what this thing would look like. And they brought in the first company was Michael's unit, Bravo Company 2508. And up to that point, they had several suicides. And after that first Operation Resilience retreat, they had not had another death by suicide since that very first one. That was in 2019, so in 6 years. And after 5 years, they came back for a second. And up to this point, we've had over, I think, about 800, 850 veterans go through this program. And really, it's cool because it takes guys like Adam. They just reach out to us, say, "Hey, I saw this on Instagram that you guys do this." And I think, I'm pretty sure it was Adam, you were the first one that reached out, weren't you?
Yes.
He reached out, Veronica, who's our deputy director of programs. He's like, "Hey, my unit could use this." And then they start kind of vetting it. They're like, "All right, tell us your story. Tell us what happened." And then we'll start, "All right, how many people can we get?" And we start, it starts really small. And I think it takes like 6 or 8 months really to get everybody together. Because as you guys can imagine, at first there's all this, everybody wants to come. So, "I'm going to go see my buddies and we're going to drink and party and have fun, right? And we're all going to act like we're 19, 20 year old kids again." But that's not what this weekend's about. Now, we'll bring everybody together. Oh, go back through this. We start working, getting everybody confirmed up. We set a date. We usually hold one in the spring and one around Veterans Day. We'll fly them in. We've been doing them in Charlotte. We've done them in Texas and a couple other places. But they usually get in on Thursday afternoon during the day. We get them into Charlotte, get everybody together, and we have a really nice welcome dinner the first night where we bring in our donors and really make it. It's about these guys and say, "Hey, look, these are the people that care about you. You're not alone. The community cares about you." And from there, we're with them every step of the way. We go and do fun stuff. I think we've taken some guys to like NASCAR experiences or game rooms, just something fun to do sober. together. And then that's the first half of the day. Second half of the day, they sit down as a unit and work with a clinician. And we bring in people that do artwork, and they go through and talk about their entire deployment. And they'll start with the pre-deployment workup and work all the way up into where they are today. And for a lot of these guys, they haven't seen each other for 10 or 15 years, and they might be sitting on a lot of those emotions, those stories, because they have their perception, and they might be holding some weight on them, and they're able to talk it out. And I know there was one unit that we had, and there was a guy, when he got there, he's like, I hate that guy. He got my buddies killed. And they talked it out in the room with everybody there, and what he didn't know, the other guy's perspective and how he had been living with these things. And at the end of the day, they're hugging and loving on each other and actually able to like heal a little bit more. But really bringing that unit camaraderie back together is our main goal, showing these guys that, hey, you know what, there's people outside that love you, but you guys got through those hard things together, and you can still lean on each other.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's great. And so it's unit based, right? So it's like guys who serve together at one point, and gals too. I'm saying guys kind of as a general term. I don't want to get any hate mail with this, but folks getting together who were deployed together, you know, and they had similar experiences, you know, good and bad. You know, there's some good fun times that happen sometimes on a deployment, but you know, but they are, it's not like a group of strangers getting together is what it's sounding like. Is that correct?
That's absolutely that. And it's cool because you'll see guys, like I said, they haven't seen each other for 10 years.
Yeah.
They're old and out of shape. Like the rest of us. Right. They're like, I used to be that guy on the wall over there with a six pack. Now I got a 12 pack, but you know, they jump right in to like the same inside jokes, the same, like, their kid, they're those young men, those service members again together, and really seeing how much they really love each other. It makes an impact.
Yeah. Yeah. So Adam, from your perspective as someone who's kind of gone through this, tell us a little bit about the program, kind of what got you interested in it, what got it on your radar, and how was your experience going through it?
Yeah, for sure. I would say it's a very similar experience to what you just described. So it was June of 2024 when I had a soldier who was in my platoon commit suicide. He was the third one from my platoon since we'd gotten home. And when we actually did the math when we were at Op Resilience, we've lost 22 soldiers to various things since we've come home in 2010. Kind of a poignant number because we lost 22 soldiers on that deployment. And so now we're at the point where being home is more dangerous for us than when we were there. So I was trying to reconnect with the guys in my platoon to, you know, share the tough news of who we had lost. And one of the soldiers, you know, I told him, and great NCO, Sergeant Isaac Matheson, I was just like, hey, you know, are you okay? How are you doing? And he's like, I'm not okay. When is someone going to do something about this? It really kind of hit me pretty hard. And it's like, you know, shoot, I'm failing as a leader. Like, you know, I got to find something. So I started Googling, you know, going on the internet late that night, trying to see what was out there, and came across the Independence Fund and this Op Resilience. And there were just so many parallels. So the unit that Stephen talked about, 2508, they were the ones who replaced us in the same AO in Afghanistan. So they, you know, it was really interesting to see that this program was built off of that, because they knew exactly what we had been through. And so it, again, just seeing what that program could do. And one of the big things was that, you know, they had the ability to bring everyone together. You know, I think a lot of the folks who need stuff like this the most probably aren't in a spot where they can always, you know, fly themselves across the country. And, you know, it was just a really, it was something new that I hadn't seen in terms of a resource. I just, like you said, you know, there's a spot on the website where you can reach out. You know, I spent a couple hours writing a letter explaining why I thought our unit would be a good candidate for this. And then I actually shared it with a couple guys in my platoon to make sure that, you know, I was saying everything the right way. And one of them, Tanner Kuth, had been pretty severely injured in Afghanistan. And he had some connections with Tim Kennedy from his time at Walter Reed. And, you know, we basically kind of just used all, you know, all avenues that we could to reach out and say, hey, like, you know, we need help, and we would, you know, love for you guys to consider us. And so, you know, between Tanner and, you know, Tim Kennedy, and then our outreach through Veronica, jumped on a call with Sarah and the team at Independence Fund, And from the very beginning, you know, again, just I think that connection to, you know, what both of our units, the 2508 and 117, had gone through in Afghanistan, everyone was like, yep, this makes sense. You guys would definitely benefit from this. I think one of the great things about Independence Fund in the beginning, it was really focused on like company level, you know, so 100 to 150 soldiers, you know, at that size. And from the beginning, I was just like, hey, I need to make a big ask. You know, I need to bring as many people from our whole battalion as we can. And they didn't blink an eye. They didn't flinch. You know, we found a way to accommodate every soldier that we could find that wanted to come. We were able to get there. And so, yeah, that was kind of how we got, you know, involved with it. Again, just that connection, I think. And then, sorry, what's the next part of your question on like when we got there? You know, I'd love to sing the praises, but I want to make sure I'm following along on.
Yeah, no, you're good. Yeah, this kind of, you know, the direction I was trying to head anyways is, you know, kind of what was your experience in the program? You know, it's easy for someone who represents the organization to say how great it is. But, you know, I'd love to hear from the perspective of someone who actually went through the program, you know, with your unit, with the folks that you served with, you know, what did you experience going through this? You know, obviously losing guys beforehand who you served with, and then going through this program, and then what did the outcome look like for you guys as far as, you know, the transformation, if you will, of your unit, as far as, you know, were there more soldiers who, any more soldiers going forward? Did that rate decline? Did it dry up altogether? Like no more, you know, suicides coming out of that unit? Or, you know, kind of how did that look like for you guys?
Yeah. So, you know, we haven't had any since then. We're right at a year out from our time, and, you know, I'll knock on wood, because, you know, I think one of the things that we learned is like this process is never going to end. The process of healing and staying connected, OPRES is a huge first step. But one of the things that I think we learned there is like most of the resources that are out there are very short term. And even OPRES, right? Like you go there for 4 days, and then the burden of staying connected falls somewhere else. I think that was the biggest thing that OPRES does do, is it brings everyone together and connects you. I mean, it gives you that mechanism to do that. You know, we started in June, and we didn't, you know, our retreat was in November. So we had multiple months of just trying to find everybody. So there's a ton of work that I did together with Veronica from the Independence Fund of, you know, finding where these guys are at, reaching out and, you know, then explaining what this is. And, you know, there's a lot of folks who didn't want to come because they didn't want to relive or, you know, have some of that stuff come back up. So, you know, working with Veronica was kind of my partner through all of it to convince folks and say, this is why we're coming back. This is what we're going to go through. You know, we did all the things that Stephen was talking about. We went to a hockey game, we went to a NASCAR garage and, you know, race each other, changing tires, which was a great way to just get back together, you know, and take off some of the pressure, because the clinical sessions were by far the most important part of it, but they were super heavy. You know, we got together and started talking, and I think we had like two hour sessions dedicated to just talking through what happened on our deployment. And we got to the end of the second 2 hour session. So we've been going for 4 hours. And I think we were maybe like 30 days into our deployment at that point of like how far we had progressed. And we're like, hey, we need more time. You know, like guys were crying, you know, emotions were coming out. It was good. And not a single person wanted to stop or take a break. So, you know, I went up to the clinicians, you know, we took a little break and I was like, hey, you guys got to help us out, like buckle in. We got a lot more to cover. And we spent, I don't know, I mean, hours. I think we were probably in there for 8+ hours. I mean, we could have stayed more, but, you know, it was just like Stephen said, talking of what's Charlie Company's perspective versus Bravo Company's perspective. You know, here's a guy who is in a, you know, one of the very traumatic events, and he got to share his experience of, you know, what he saw and remembered of that. And that, you know, led to just other people having conversations and people getting stuff off their chest. And even just talking about it, you know, there wasn't those initial sessions. There's not like a solution, you know, like no one's here to say, cool, this is what happened to you and do these 5 things and you're going to be good. The value comes from, again, just being back together with that group where, you know, if you try to talk about some of the things that, you know, you see on deployment with someone who hadn't been there, either you're afraid to talk about how bad things really were, or you've got to spend 20 minutes giving him the backup or the, you know, the context of how it got there. All of a sudden you're back in a group and, you know, in a room with a group of guys who know the whole story, and you can get sure. right to the point on, you know, whatever the things that are bothering you or causing issues. So that part was by far the most important. You know, I was nervous going in, cause I worked together to put this whole thing together, and I was like, man, I hope this doesn't flop. You know, like if we get there and,
We were saying the same thing. We said every operator was like, oh, I hope we don't screw this up.
And, you know, I can't say enough, like from the minute, you know, I got to the airport, like it was just a first class event. You know, every detail had been thought through by the Independence Fund team, so that when we got there, you felt at home, you felt comfortable, you knew everything was taken care of, and all you had to worry about was, you know, just taking care of yourself and being back with the boys. But, you know, one of the coolest parts, you know, we get to the hotel, and I was one of the first ones to get there. And we had a whole room, you know, set aside for us for check-in basically. And, you know, there's elevators that, you know, guys were coming in, and every 5 minutes, you know, the elevator door would open and someone would come through that you hadn't seen in 15 years, like Steven said, and everyone starts hugging and busting chops again. And then 5 minutes later, someone else comes in that you hadn't seen.
Right.
That was one of the coolest parts, was again, just like being able to see everyone connect again. Guys, again, who would never have been able to make it if, you know, they didn't have the support of the Independence Fund to get them there. You know, you could see the guys coming in that really needed it. You could see the guys coming in who were excited to be there and step up again as leaders to help facilitate and take over and look out for their guys again. So it was just a great experience from the get-go.
Yeah, that's awesome. And from kind of an outsider's perspective, I haven't taken a part in Operation Resilience or any of these programs, but just this past summer, there was a memorial service for a guy that I had served with. He had cancer and unfortunately passed away. And so a bunch of us got together for this, and it wasn't, you know, huge company level numbers of people that were coming out or anything like that. It was, you know, however many, maybe a dozen or so, 20 some odd people that showed up at any one point. But just seeing those guys who, again, I haven't seen some of these guys for probably 15 years or so, and just getting together and you pick right back up where you left off is the way I experience it anyways. And yeah, obviously there's some catching up to do because people, you know, have obviously lived lives over the last 15 years, and there's stuff that you're going to catch up on and things like that. But when you're talking about the deployment, or you're talking about things that you guys did pre-deployment and all those kind of things, all those stories come up. And again, to your point, Adam, like there was some stuff that happened that I didn't know about, which made certain things make a lot more sense to me as we got to talking about it. And I was like, oh, that's why that particular decision was made, or that's why we did this, that, or the other. And, you know, not to get into all the details, but, you know, it just for me, I was like, okay, well, this made a lot more sense now that I got to have that conversation. And so, you know, sometimes you might be sitting right next to the same person or you know, laying in a foxhole next to the same person and in the same exact event and experience two different things. Your perspective and that other person's perspective might be totally different. And even the way you remember things might be totally different. And it could affect how you perceive things down the line. And it could, quite frankly, just be a detriment to how your mental state, you know, evolves over that time, because you start to see things in a certain way. But you know, when you start to get that other person's perspective, maybe there's something you missed and they have that perspective that you're missing. And, you know, it's hard to get all of that when you don't talk about it. And I know for me, my deployment was a little bizarre end, as far as like, I left well before, a couple months before the rest of my unit left. And so there were things that they experienced that I didn't experience, but there were certain things that I did experience that they may not have known exactly what had happened up until that point. And so it was good that we were able to kind of get together and talk and kind of share some of that stuff that ordinarily we might have been able to do while we were coming back home and going through demobilization and all the stuff that you normally do. For us, I didn't get that opportunity. So, you know, being able to sit with a group of guys that you deployed with is, it can definitely bring up some bad memories and things that maybe you just don't want to talk about, but it could help kind of put things into perspective and help you with some of those things too, that you might've been struggling with. And so as far as what you guys are saying is, it seems like that's exactly how this program is kind of structured. And it seems like, and maybe Stephen, you can talk to this a little bit. It seems like it has a pretty damn good track record as far as, you know, helping these units out that were struggling with suicides of the folks who served, to kind of transform them, you know, afterwards and help them get through these things without having, you know, this sky high number of suicides, right?
Yeah. And like Adam said, this isn't a long-term fix to anything. I mean, that's not the goal. The goal is to give these guys the tools that are, show them the tools that they already have in each other, right? And bring, like, just bring that brotherhood back together. Everything you guys are talking about. And it always, like most units, they always kind of start the same way. They get there and they're kind of skeptical about what's going to happen and what's going on. And so I'm standing off to the side and I'm watching this happen. You can usually pick the ones out, and it's always the guy that was probably like, why are we doing this? This is stupid. Right. And it's everybody has one. In law enforcement, we always have a couple of those guys, right? Every unit, I don't care if you're military, law enforcement, fire, where, but you always have that guy. And then somewhere along the weekend, you see that guy flip. And then he comes up to you on Sunday and he's like, thank you so much. And it's always shocking, but he's like, this is what we needed. I didn't realize that the other guys were, I'm not struggling, but my buddy was. And I know I need to step up to be there for him. Or the vice versa. Or maybe that buddy is the one that's like, man, I didn't realize I could go to him for help. Just bringing the guys back together and showing them that, you know what, you guys, you're not alone in this. And I think that's one of the biggest takeaways that we hear over and over is, we're not alone. And we've been blessed enough to be able to bring a couple units back for a second one. And the second one is always a little bit better, because the guys who didn't want to come, they start seeing everybody post on Facebook, all the cool stuff and how much they were enjoying it. And they're like, what are you? Dude, we've been trying to get in touch with you for 5 months. You blew us off, buddy. And then they want to come, and then they jump right in, you know, at that second one, and they tell about their stories. You know, there's parts where we had a unit recently, and I'd picked up a group of guys from the airport, and there's two guys sitting there. One of them was actually an amputee, and they're talking, they're like, I don't know you. Like, you deployed with us? And come to find out, the guy that was sitting with him was actually a replacement that had came up after this guy had already been hit in an IED attack. It probably replaced him. So they had two, they were still in the same dirt, but at two different times. They had a completely different experience, right?
Yeah.
So just seeing that, and then all of a sudden these guys are there together now. They have a network that they didn't even realize they had. So,
yeah, and that connection of the replacement guy who took over for the guy who was injured, it's like he probably had some questions too, like what was going on before I got here?
Yeah,
and the guy who got replaced, the guy who's injured, probably had some questions about like what happened after I left, like what was going on. And you know, so it's good to be able to get those guys together, even though they didn't necessarily know each other.
Right.
They're probably closer than they thought they were, you know.
Yeah.
they had that shared experience anyways. And you know, so Adam, I was also deployed in 2010 to Afghanistan. So you know, the time period there, like I'm familiar with like things that were going on at that time period and everything like that. And I know for me, when I left, so I left for you guys and any of the listeners who aren't familiar with my story, is I left because my younger brother, he was also deployed at the same time to Afghanistan. He was killed in action. So they sent me home after that. And it was kind of like one of those mixed blessings, because yes, I wanted to be home with my family, but at the same time, I didn't want to leave my guys behind. And so it was like, I was torn. Like I couldn't be in two places at once, especially not on opposite side of the planet, you know, so like that was a logistical nightmare. I couldn't get around. But a few weeks after I got home, we had the news on, and on CNN was the base that I was at, and the like stuff that was going on at that base. And it just tore me apart, because I was like, I should be there. Like there are guys that I know that I care about that I need to be there, but I couldn't get there. I couldn't go back. And so that was something that was difficult. And, you know, I don't know that everybody who was there necessarily understood that piece of what I was going through. And so, you know, being able to kind of share that with some of those guys, you know, would maybe have helped them, maybe not, you know, but it's just one of those things that getting people back together afterwards and being able to kind of have almost like a mini after action report and like kind of go through all of the things that y'all had experienced, and things just start to make a little bit more sense. You get a little more clarity on what happened, why it happened, why perhaps that it couldn't have happened any other way. And you kind of have to just accept it. Sometimes bad things will happen, especially in a combat situation. And so that sounds like kind of like what you guys were experiencing, right? Through this program.
Yeah. And one of the things that was really impactful for us, we had our battalion commander attended. We had some company commanders and a lot of other leaders attend. And so as we were talking through as a group, you know, what had happened, they were able to be very candid and explain what they saw from their level, right? And why they made certain decisions. And now they were either retired or had moved to a point where, you know, they could be, again, like very, very candid as to, hey, this is what happened. And, you know, maybe we didn't do the best job of this, but this is why we made this decision. And you could just see a lot of the guys, you know, if you're a junior enlisted soldier, you don't always get to understand, you know, why battalion or brigade or higher echelon make decisions. And, you know, 15 years removed from it, you still might not agree with the decision that they made, but there's just knowing why, you know, and I think seeing the human element of like those people were trying to do the right thing made a huge difference. I've done a lot of reading on stuff, and there's a great book called Achilles in Vietnam that talks about, you know, moral injury and where it comes from and what happens and, you know, what your responsibility is as a leader. And I thought about that the whole time we were there, because again, you just got to talk through that, you know, and when else can a private ask the battalion commander, you know, why did we do this, you know, and in a safe space, right? Like
Sure. Everyone
knew we were there to help each other out, and it was a legitimate question, and he got a great answer, you know? And so things like that made a huge difference for us being in that environment to talk through things like that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've noticed too, is that oftentimes when you're in that type of environment in a, you know, a deployment or things like that, things often get changed at the very last minute. And as an enlisted guy or something, you may not understand why it got changed. And all of a sudden, hey, we're not going to this place, we're going to that place. And, you know, pack up, you know, you got to pack different things. You got to do all this stuff different. And it can feel like it's a big pain in the ass. Like they're just jerking you around and it, you know, but there's a reason for it. And sometimes you're not privy to those discussions and why those decisions were made. And so in the back of my mind, anytime I had those types of situations where I felt like I was being pulled in one direction, then automatically, you know, going to another direction and whatever, it's like, look, it makes sense to somebody. It makes sense to somebody somewhere. I don't know why, because I just don't have all the information, and I don't need to have all the information. All I need to know is I need to be in this place with this equipment at this time and all that. So, you know, that for me, it was helpful to be able to just kind of get through those unknown situations. It's like, look, I'm not going to know everything that everybody else in the chain of command above me, I'm not going to know everything that they know. It would be a nightmare if I did, I think, because it would just be information overload to know all of those things. Sometimes it might be helpful, but sometimes it might be just too much. And so, but it doesn't mean that I don't have questions about what happened and that I'm not still scratching my head thinking like, hey, maybe if we did this instead of that, things would have been different. Maybe it would have been better. Who knows? Maybe it would have even been worse. But to your point, it gives people that kind of space, that kind of environment to be able to ask these questions. Because one thing that I've learned from doing this show is about moral injuries. And, you know, when someone in leadership kind of betrays that trust that you have in them, that can really affect people in a negative way. But in a lot of cases, it's not that the leader wanted to, and I'm not saying every case, I'm sure there's some cases out there where this is true, but you know, the leader who's out there is not necessarily out there just trying to screw guys over. They're making the best decision with the information that they have at the time. And sometimes there's just not enough time to disseminate all the information but having that opportunity to shine some light on the situation is super important. I think at that point, because it now allows people to say, okay, now I got a little bit more information about this. Now I can understand why that decision was made. Again, I may not agree with it, but I at least have some indication why. And it's not like people just didn't care or, you know, were trying to screw us over. It was because of, you know, whatever the reason was. And so that's a lot of helpful things that are happening there. As far as, you know, maybe careers or relationships and things like that, that people are now dealing with after getting out of the military, you know, as veterans, we all are dealing with this stuff, you know, trying to figure our place out in the world. How did you see this program helping folks with other areas of their lives, not just, you know, kind of maybe PTSD or other things that they might be dealing with? You know, how did that kind of affect their relationships, their careers? Did you see that there were some benefits there for these folks?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think anytime you can address some of those, you know, root issues that you talked about, you're going to make someone more successful in life from an employability standpoint. And so, you know, I feel very confident that, you know, we helped in that regard going through OpRes and you know, what the team at OpRes was able to help us with. You know, they brought a lot of resources. We talked a lot of those things, but, you know, just guys coming back together and building that support structure makes them better able to deal with life. And so I think that helped a lot. We also tried to build it as a networking event. You know, like there were a lot of guys that, hey, you know, one guy's a lineman in Montana, another guy's a lineman in Kansas. Like, you guys are in the same career field. You know, you're not that far apart. You know, there's opportunities that, you know, things like that where guys can just see what else is out there and grow their networks. One of the things we've done to try and kind of, you know, expand upon OpRes is build a stronger connection mechanism for our group. And so we kind of had a small one in place before we went. Myself and four other guys, we took over our regimental association, the 17th Infantry Regiment Association. And we've kind of used that as our, you know, how do we stay connected, join the association, you know, get emails, you know, get news, be on our Facebook page, you know, using that one for the connection piece, but also for the networking and the career piece. You know, we've got a lot of things still that we have ideas that we want to do, but that being one of them is, hey, we got a LinkedIn page, you know, so if you are, you know, a 17th veteran and you're hiring, you know, could you post that there, you know, or if you want to get into a certain company or certain career field, you know, using, you know, our connection as the 17th Infantry Regiment or 117 to say, hey, maybe you don't know a guy there, but I can look on my LinkedIn and see this person works there. Let me reach out and make that connection. Yeah. You know, we're trying to build some of that stuff. It's a work in progress because there's just a lot going on in everyone's lives, but it all kind of goes back to that connection piece. We really wanted to be focused on not taking it, you know, not losing the opportunity and the momentum we had from OpRes, staying connected through Facebook. You know, the guys, we had 100 guys that showed up and said, hey, we want you to go out and find three more, you know, and get them involved in the association. Get, you know, even if it's just a messenger chat that you have together, but like, yeah, Everyone's kind of got this task to keep this going, because we don't want to have, you know, worst case scenario, another thing happen and we realize 3 years later and we didn't maximize the opportunity that OpRes gave us.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to let that opportunity fall out, because you got all these people together. And sometimes I think after leaving the military and you kind of drift apart a little bit in some cases, because you're trying to figure yourself out. You're trying to figure out what's my next career, where am I going to live, what am I going to do, all these things. You're trying to figure out all that stuff for yourself. You may not have enough space mentally, or, you know, just physically, emotionally, whatever, to worry about other people's stuff that they have going on as well. But, you know, now that you're, you know, a few years out and you've had some time to kind of figure out what am I going to do next? What's my next act and all that kind of stuff. You know, maybe you do have some time for some of these folks. And now that you've gotten back together and you're able to reconnect, that's a perfect opportunity to strengthen those connections and not just, like you said, not wasting that opportunity. So Stephen, for folks who are listening right now and they're interested in Operation Resilience, maybe for their own unit or, you know, somebody that they know that like, hey, this unit's been having some troubles and we need to get these guys through this. What's the best way to reach out and what are you guys looking for in terms of these units? And I know Adam mentioned kind of like company size, you know, level of people, but you know, what's the ideal candidate? What kind of group are you looking for? And, you know, how can people reach out and get involved?
Yeah, we're looking at that shared experience. That's the biggest thing. It's that shared experience. People that you know, chewed the same dirt and they were together at a certain time. Like he said, they kind of expanded outside of the company and a lot more people that maybe they were in a different battalion or whatever, but they were there together. That's the first thing. And then go on independencefund.org and there's a contact us and link there. I'm pretty sure that's what Adam did, and it sends you straight to Veronica, and she'll call. We're looking for units all the time, and she'll you really give kind of like, all right, this is our first step. We got to find. We try to keep like we need at least 50. We want to try to get 50. Like let's get a verbal commitment of those. That'll be our starting point, and then we'll grow from there, and we'll start building a Facebook page if they have a link like Adam was talking about. Hey, let's utilize what you already have in place, and we'll start just building that network a little bit more and a little bit more, and trying to spiderweb out to everybody they know. Everybody's like, what's it need to look like? Well, everybody looks a little bit different, right? I don't think we've had any two units that were exactly the same. Like Adam's unit, they were in Afghanistan right before a Bravo 2508, had a lot of the same shared experiences, but those two units are so different. Like yeah. Their reactions, how they, you know, it's very different. So we don't have like this, you have to fit in this box. It's anybody we've, it doesn't matter what branch of the service, doesn't have to just be Army, Marines, Navy. We don't care. Just people that have that same experience and maybe those same struggles. That's the biggest thing. And you know, if you've had suicides or maybe some people have reached out and they're struggling, that was a big indicator for one of the our previous units. They had some guys that were really struggling. They didn't have a high number of suicides, but they were trending, right? And hey, if we can stop a problem before it begins, let's do that. Let's try to get ahead of the problem. So I don't want to give you like it has to fit in this box, but chewing the same dirt, being there together, that's the first thing. And then we'll try to make it work and get these guys together and bring them together to see that, hey, that's your buddy still. He's still your brother, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah. As far as costs go, what is involved with all that from you know, the Independence Fund versus like the individuals? Is there any cost on that end?
No cost to the individuals at all. It is donor funded. We get sponsors. It's everything we do is donor funded. So the Operation Resilience, we go out and we get corporate sponsors, we get private sponsors, donors that'll come. And that's kind of part of the welcome dinner. We invite them to that welcome dinner so they can meet these guys and say, hey, look, your company's doing great things. You guys are putting your money where it matters. And
great.
They can actually reach out and see that these are real men. It's not just somebody you see on Fox News or CNN or something. These are real guys that they're walking the streets with us every day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's good to know too, as far as the costs go. I wanted to point that out because there might be some people out there who are like, this sounds wonderful. It sounds amazing. I just don't have the cash to be able to fund something like that. And so, and what is the typical length of the program for, you know, like a unit, you know, a group of guys, they get there and they go through the program. What's the time commitment involved?
Time commitment, we get you there sometime between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Thursday of the week. And then you fly out sometime afternoon on Sunday. And that's kind of gives us time to get you in, get you checked in. And then our last session is Sunday morning. And then we get everybody out of there. We want to have everybody home by Sunday night so that they can go back into their week and really only missing, if they have to miss 2 days of work, it's going to be like that Thursday, Friday.
Sure. Yeah. And so again, that was another question I think some folks might have is like, okay, well, what's the time commitment? Are we talking like 2 weeks? Are we talking a month? Or like what is the time commitment? And yeah, sure. Most people can probably figure out how to get a couple of days off from work. You know, even if they're working, you know, a weekend shift or something like that, they can probably figure out ways to do that. You know, with enough planning, I think in advance, they should be able to handle that. And, you know, so I think that's great. You know, that costs and all that stuff are all taken care of. People are able to participate in this with not a ton of interruption to their day-to-day life. And sounds like the benefits are just too much, too good to be true almost. And it's like, it's like too good to pass up. And, you know, part of me is, as I'm hearing you guys talk about this, part of me is saying like, why isn't this just done at like the federal level where they just have a program that encourages people to do this type of thing, you know, even if it's working through the Independence Fund or something like that, or however that might work, but you know, just figuring out ways to get that to happen more frequently.
So Operation Resilience is recognized by the VA.
Okay.
So it is recognized by the VA. They don't run it, but Dr. Keita Franklin, she used to work for the VA. She was one of their head clinicians for suicide prevention. And she's who really built the clinical part of this. I mean, she's there with us every time. So it is recognized by the VA, but you know, the reality is if you tell a veteran, hey, the VA is going to help you out, what's your response usually going to be?
Right.
Now, to the VA's credit, in the past few months or so, we're getting a little bit more positive reaction to that. Right.
Yeah.
But more often than not, it's an automatic, they're going to turn you off and they don't want to have anything to do with it. I mean, so
sure.
It that makes it hard. But one thing we will do on Sunday after the session, when everybody's getting ready to leave, we do a resource fair. So we've brought in people from the VA that can help out with benefit people to help out. We bring in a service dog company that will give service dogs to veterans and law enforcement for free of charge. I think they've given away in the past 3 years, like 40 dogs to service members at no cost to those service members. I'm not sure if Adam Jr., I'm not sure if you guys got any. I think you did. I think a couple of your guys may have.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. I don't remember if the dogs were there. The thing that I will say about kind of the aftermath and what Stephen was saying about the VA, like, you know, the people at the VA are great. They're trying to do their best. I know one of the things that always turned me off about whether it was VA training or suicide training in the Army, like it's these very generic, like, all right, watch this PowerPoint or, you know, listen to these questions. Everything at OpRes is dialed in specific to your unit. So if you're going to talk about, you know, someone who almost committed suicide, like it's, you know, Specialist Jones, and he's probably he's getting up himself to say, hey, I almost did this and this is why I didn't. Right. Or if you're going to talk through a moral dilemma you had on deployment or a tough day, like you're not reading about World War II. Like you're talking about what happened with your guys on, you know, August 14th, 2009, you know, so it's like once people realize that, like, this is not some generic thing, like this is specific for us. The OpRes team does just a phenomenal job of doing that. The most impactful part of our experience, the last thing you have there is a bonfire, and there's no planning for it. They just leave it up to the unit to say, here's a bonfire for you guys. you know, chow's provided, but you do whatever you need to do that night. And so I went to Veronica with, I had this idea. We had a teepee on our fob back in Afghanistan that kind of became this memorial. And we put the, you know, pictures of the guys that we lost in this teepee. And I don't even know where like the idea of it came from. It was a very important part of our fob. And I showed a picture of it to Veronica and I was like, could you get this somehow? And I was like, I'll pay for it. You know, we've got funds from our association, but like, if we could get a teepee at this bonfire. And she just was like, you know, say no more. We'll make it happen. I didn't have anything else to do with it other than giving her this picture. And when we rolled up on these buses to this bonfire with a spitting image, 30-foot tall teepee, exactly to the memorial that we had in our fob, like, I mean, none of the guys could say a word. Like, everyone was just like, holy cow. I mean, the input and the effort and the, again, just knowing like this is important to this unit, putting that there, you know, no other unit that would make a difference for, but for us that made, you know, it made the whole week for us. And so
I got to tell you, finding a TP in Charlotte, North Carolina was not the easiest thing in the world.
but they did it, you know? And so like, those are the things that I think really make it a special program is, you know, from the minute you get there to the minute you end, you're not just a number in the VA system. You know, you are specifically being taken care of by the folks at Operas to make you better.
Yeah, and that's important too. And those are all, you know, good points. And I'm glad you guys brought that up too, because you're right. Going through a generic suicide prevention program that is not tailored to that particular group of people, it's not going to be as effective as something that's dialed in, you know, even with those little details that to an outsider looking in might not mean anything, but to you guys, it meant everything. And that type of stuff, I'm sure every unit's got some little thing that would make it that much more special, that much more impactful for them. And, you know, just that care and consideration going into it is super important. So guys, this sounds absolutely amazing as far as a program goes. I'm really encouraging folks who are listening right now. You know, you don't have to go it alone. You don't have to plan this type of event on your own. You know, you can reach out and there are people there who are going to help coordinate all this type of stuff. So if you think it's a good idea and you'd like to, you know, get the ball rolling, at least reach out and see where that takes you. You never know. By, you know, a couple months from now, you might have a whole group of guys that you hadn't seen in years come together and be able to start healing together. I know that's part of the reason why I started this podcast, is because there's just too many guys that I served with who took their own life, and I couldn't just sit around doing nothing. And so if somebody is out there thinking to themselves, like, this is too much, like, one's too many, but you know, when those numbers are trending upwards, that like, someone has to do something. And you know, I think if you're the one thinking that, that someone probably is you. And so step up, reach out, start doing something, at least get the ball rolling. And, you know, maybe you don't have all the connections, but you might have some of the connections, and some of those other people might have connections, and more people will end up having connections that the word will just spread. You know, have folks check it out on their own and see if it makes sense for them. But you know, do that initial legwork and at least get the ball rolling and see how you can maybe help save some of the people that you served with. And that to me, I think is a great first place to start. Right.
One thing, go on we're really big on Instagram. Like we post so much stuff. Go on the Independence Fund Instagram page and you'll see videos and testimonials from the guys that go. We try to get stories from people. Go on there. You can scroll back through our videos, even from just this past November at the beginning of this month, and see at the beginning of November, and see that unit that came in and how maybe some of the activities that they did. That way people see, okay, everybody's always a little apprehensive at first, but kind of break that ice a little bit.
Yeah.
And understand it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have been a leader in your unit. It can, you can be the lowest level guy, reach out. We've had from the lowest bottom of the totem pole guy all the way up to the last unit. We had a colonel. He was the company commander or the battalion commander that most of these guys had never had a conversation with, but he was struggling and he reached out to us, says, "Hey, we need this." And he made it happen. So it doesn't matter where you sat on that chain of command. It's okay to step up, be a leader, you know, lead up if you have to.
Right. And I think that's something that, you know, Adam, I'm sure you can attest to this too. Like everyone was encouraged to be a leader at one point or another, you know, to kind of step up when you needed to. You might need to fill in a role if, you know, if you're out on a mission and something happens to your, you know, squad leader or platoon sergeant or you know, whoever, you might have to move up. I mean, I was an E5 and I was doing our platoon leader's job for a period of time when we were in Afghanistan. So like you're going to have to step up at some point, and you can't just say, "Oh, well that's not my job. That's somebody else's problem to figure out," because that problem or that person might be the one who is having the problem and they're not in that maybe right state of mind to figure it out. And if you're hearing this now and you're like, "You know what? I feel like there might be some guys who could benefit from this that I served with." I mean, step up. Be that person who, you know, makes that first step and get that ball rolling. So, gentlemen, it has been a pleasure speaking with both of you, learning about the Independence Fund, Operation Resilience from both sides of the equation here, where, you know, from Stephen, from your perspective, from, you know, kind of helping run the program, and Adam, from your perspective, kind of going through the program. I think it kind of paints a good picture for the folks who are, you know, they know they need something. They just don't know what they might need. This is a perfect opportunity for some of those people. So to both of you, thank you for all that you do, and, you know, best of luck going forward. And I hope a lot of people hear this episode and definitely reach out and get the help that they need. So thank you both.
Thank you for doing what you do. This is awesome.
Appreciate it.
I echo that. Thank you very much.